Hi, everyone. A former CEO faces federal prosecution for looting his own company in what some consider a case of executive redemption gone wrong. I'm your host, Bill Coffin, and this is the Ethicast. On May 10th, a grand jury in Central California issued an indictment against Andrew A. Weiderhorn, the former CEO and current controlling shareholder of Fat Brands Incorporated, a publicly traded casual dining franchise company whose holdings include a number of familiar brands such as Fatburger, Johnny Rockets, Hurricane Grill and Wings, and Ponderosa and Bonanza Steakhouses. Weiderhorn previously served nearly 15 months in federal prison in 2004 and 2005 for filing an illegal tax return and paying an illegal gratuity to a business associate. Taking Fat Brands public after he got out was widely hailed as his personal and professional redemption. But now he is accused of using Fat Brands as his own personal treasury. According to the indictment, from 2010 through early 2021, Weiderhorn orchestrated nearly $47 million in bogus personal loans from Fat Brands that were never intended to be repaid, were written off as losses on Fat Brands' books, and were used to fund Weiderhorn's lavish lifestyle. The loans have been characterized as part of a long-running pattern of fraud and tax evasion on Weiderhorn's part, and the loans themselves made it impossible for Fat Brands to even pay its own bills. Fat Brands itself, as well as several officers of the company, are also named in the indictment, which could potentially put the company into receivership. The Securities and Exchange Commission has also filed a civil suit over this, and FBI and IRS investigations are currently underway. In trading after the indictment announcement, the value of Fat Brands stock dropped by nearly 25%. Joining us to discuss the governance takeaways and implications from this developing story is Ethisphere Chief Strategy Officer and Executive Chair of the Business Ethics Leadership Alliance, Erica Salmon Byrne. Erica, thanks for being on the show as always.
No, Bill, you know, you and I have been looking forward to recording this one since this story dropped. So let's get into it. This is a great case study.
It really is. And before we get started, I encourage everyone out there to go to justice.gov/USAO-CDCA/PR and read the May 10th press release on this indictment. We'll link to it in the show notes. But the press release goes into detail around the charges, and it really lays out what the U.S. District Attorney's Office, Central District of California, is characterizing as the work of a serial tax cheat. And Erica, how else can we say it? Corporate governance gone completely off the rails.
Off the rails.
Yeah. So look, you and I have discussed before how humans are messy and unpredictable creatures. And if it weren't for that, there wouldn't be much need for an ethics and compliance function. When you look at this story, how much of it appears to be the failure of an organization's E&C function, and how much of it appears to be a case of personal ethics gone awry?
Yeah, Bill, you know, it's interesting because every time one of these stories releases, one of the things that you and I do is we go look at the functional controls that might have been in place or not in place at the organization at issue. And if you Google Fat Brands Code of Conduct, you get a 3-page PDF that was posted in 2017. And to me, that says an awful lot about the lack of compliance and ethics controls at Fat Brands, and a lot about the way in which this particular CEO saw the company as purely and totally an extension of himself, and, you know, not a publicly traded company where he was operating it in the best interests of the franchisees or the other stakeholders of the business. You know, not updating your code in 7 years is a, you know, that's it's a pretty big red flag for me.
Yeah, it's pretty eye-watering, to be honest. It was, and at only 3 pages. I mean, one appreciates a easy-to-read code of conduct, but 3 pages seems spare, given the breadth and depth of the enterprise.
It would fail every factor of our assessment process, yes.
Yeah. So in his statements to the media, Martin Estrada, U.S. attorney in the Central District of California, seems to characterize this whole thing as a classic case of white-collar recidivism. When we're talking about executive leadership, especially within a public company, where can boards best draw the line between redemption and risk management?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Bill, I think anytime that, you know, you and look, people make mistakes. So the question that you need to ask as a board member in these kinds of situations is, you know, did this person, what indications do I have that this person made a mistake and isn't going to do it again? And what indications do I have that this person is looking for another opportunity to engage in what is largely the same behavior, right? I mean, this is someone who was looking for a way to fund a lifestyle that included Rolls Royces, right? And I don't know if you and I, but the last time I was in a Johnny Rockets, it did not appear to me like the kind of place where the CEO of that organization should be driving a Phantom, right?
No. They were not putting Rolls Royce money into that operation.
Yeah. And, you know, every indication in this particular situation is that, you know, this was a founder CEO controlling shareholder who saw the money that investors put into the business as an extension of his own bank account. That's really what this is.
Speaking of boards, the board of Fat Brands made headlines last year when it prompted numerous lawsuits over the removal of, I believe it was five independent board members.
Five independent directors. Yeah.
Who were then replaced with members of Whitehorn's family. So first, and the obvious question is, how much of a red flag is that to you as a governance expert? And secondly, from risk management perspective, how much does a move like that invite the kind of scrutiny that is bound to uncover any other misconduct if it exists?
Yeah. So Bill, what happened in this particular situation, you know, when Fat Brands went public, it went public as a controlled corporation. But the family had not elected to actually sit the board that way, right? They followed what all of us would see as more typical governance activities. So if I'm an investor in Fat Brands, yes, I understand that there's a controlling shareholder, but it's not being managed as a controlled corporation at that point. Yeah. What they did when they flipped the board is they took the five independent directors that were on the board at the time. They removed them. They replaced them with three of his family, three of his children, and two franchisees. And that is, if I'm an investor in Fat Brands, an enormous red flag, right? Because that basically means that there is no one in that boardroom that is going to be comfortable telling the leadership team no, and that they are truly a rubber stamp board at that point, right? Whatever it is the CEO wants, they're just going to go ahead and do. And even after he was no longer the CEO, whatever he wants as the controlling shareholder, he's going to go ahead and do. Now, part of his counterpoint, and you see this in some of the news articles, you know, from that particular period in time, was, well, we always, you know, disclosed the fact that it was a controlled corporation. And that is true, but just the fact, just because it's a controlled corporation doesn't mean you don't have a fiduciary duty to the people who invested in the business, right? Yeah. The process, and you and I have talked about this, Bill, over the years, the process of going public is a compact, a social contract that you make with the people who have given you their money. And they give you money to grow the business. And in return, you're supposed to take good care of it. And when you don't do that, that is a violation of the way in which you are supposed to be accessing the capital markets. And, you know, you end up in situations like this. So from my perspective, just looking at, you know, the publicly available facts in this situation, every one of those directors should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah. And you know, what was interesting is that as we were doing research for this episode, a statement that really struck me was, I think it was when the lawsuits regarding this board switch, you know, were filed, and there's a bit of furor over it. You know, the response from Fat Brands was, hey, you know, we've always been a family oriented business, so that's why we're putting family on the board. And that just struck me as a particularly disingenuous explanation, and one that didn't speak at all to how is this new slate of directors going to help, you know, direct the company in a more meaningful way. It struck me as the reddest of flags.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the description of who sits on the Fat Brands board, right, there is no one on that, almost no one on that list that knows what good governance looks like. I won't say no one, because there's a couple of people with a background where they should have known better. But, you know, the fact of the matter is you've got people sitting on that board who have no idea how to handle the responsibility of being a director, because it is a responsibility. And you know, they have no sense of how to engage in the kind of oversight that the business needed. And that's obvious by what has happened, right? It's not just the former CEO that's been indicted. The company's in a heck of a lot of trouble too, as is the rest of the, you know, other members of the leadership team.
Yeah. And one last word about the board is that, you know, I don't know any of those people personally, of course, but looking at their relationships to Wiederhorn himself, none of those people strike you as having any kind of authority to really challenge anything that Wiederhorn says. So if he says jump, they're going to say hell high. And that's not the way it should be between CEO and the board.
That, I mean, that's the reason why, Bill, I referred to them as a rubber stamp board, right? There is not a single person that based on, you know, the information that the company itself put on their website about who they are, that would have been in a position to look at Wiederhorn and say, you can't do that.
Now, in a public statement, Wiederhorn's attorney characterized this indictment as, quote, an unfortunate example of government overreach and a case with no victims, no losses, and no crimes, end quote. Now, you frequently and eloquently link the deeds of corporate misconduct to their real-world impacts. So does this defense strike you as being particularly tone-deaf, given the alleged wrongdoing? Or is this just a case of it's the best defense that one can muster in a situation like this?
Yeah. You know, Bill, look, we'll never know what else the company could have done with the money involved here. Right. So for those of you out there listening who have not dug into the details of the indictment the way that Bill and I have, basically what we have here is a case where the company loaned money to another one of Wiederhorn's companies. Those loans were then forgiven. So basically it was not a loan, it was a payment. And, you know, that and all of that went through the system without touching any kind of tax withholding or any kind of reporting in that regard. Could that money have been used to expand the business? Could that money have been used to return to shareholders? Could that money have been used to update payment systems? We don't know what else that money might have been used to do, right? What we do know is what it was used to do, which is to fund a lifestyle that was exceptionally lavish, right? The things that Wiederhorn spent that money on are, you know, Rolexes and Rolls Royces. Instead of the business that he took the money from. And so to say that there are no victims and no crime, I'm going to push back on that one. That's a line we hear all the time in white collar, you know, defense, right? That is a tried and true white collar defense attorney way of describing the charges against their client.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter here is there are shareholders out there in the universe who gave Fat Brands their money. And this is what the Fat Brands organization decided to do with the money that they invested in the business. And I'm sorry, you know what? That's wrong.
Someone out there is being offered their first CEO role or their first board assignment. What are the risks and best practices that we can highlight from a case like this for the benefit of first-time top leaders?
So you always want to look at the give and take between the leadership team and the board, right? Have you surrounded yourself with the kind of people that are going to challenge the decisions you're making and the things that you think are appropriate to do? Or have you surrounded yourself with people who are yes people? And the fact of the matter is, you know, the higher you go in a hierarchy, the more yes people you surround yourself with, and the more you believe that anything you want to do is okay. And unfortunately, we have a lot of examples of people in the world who believe that the rules don't apply to them. And, you know, we're looking at that right now. So if I'm a director and somebody comes to me and says, hey, we've got a closed corporation with a CEO founder that is the controlling shareholder, my first question is going to be, what are the controls that you've put in place to make sure that that person doesn't abuse their position? And that's something that anybody who's looking at this situation should really be asking themselves first and foremost.
Well, Erica, it is always illuminating to get your insights on these developing stories that both reflect and inform the constantly evolving landscape of the ethics economy. Thanks again for joining us.
Oh, Bill, it's my pleasure. And, you know, you and I will keep an eye on this one and see where it goes, because, you know, as the facts unfold in this particular situation, I'm sure there's going to be more lessons for all of us to learn.
To read the full text of the U.S. Attorney's Office indictment, visit justice.gov/USAO-CDCA/PR and look for the May 10th announcement regarding Wiederhorn and Fat Brands. When you're done with that, be sure to visit the Ethisphere Resource Center at ethisphere.com/resources for a helpful array of free resources that highlight best practices in internal controls, board governance, and more. I'm Bill Coffin, and this has been the Ethicast. For more episodes, please visit the Ethisphere YouTube channel at youtube.com/ethisphere. And if this is your first time enjoying the show, please make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, remember, strong ethics is good business.